Hello and welcome back to another episode of the Sunday Podcast, brought to you guys by sportsshoes.com, as always. Matt, commies is done, but we don't need that post-championship blues because obviously Euros is a week away. So, mate, we'll chat about commies and then we can start getting excited for maybe the big one, if you like, not to put a downer on the commies, but we are waiting for Euros as well, aren't we? But fabulous races, mate, particularly Kerr and Georgia Bell from a British perspective.
I thought it was some great races. Yeah. And actually, yeah, Euros will certainly have to live up to the commies because, yeah, despite it being a smaller commies in a smaller stadium, I actually just thought you're watching some of the races and there was some really good head to heads. And it just makes you realize how much you love championship racing. It's why we love British champs. It's why we love, you know, commies, and didn't matter kind of who was on the start line. You just, you know, everyone had an affiliation, you know, whether it was an England English athlete or home nations athlete versus Kenyans, Australians, whatever. I just think it made some pretty special races out there. And we'll start with the big one, the men's mile. Break it down. How did Josh Kerr win this? Well, obviously he's the world record holder, so you could argue he was always going to win. Definitely, yeah, didn't look hungover from his world record at all. Looked at, I mean, when we saw the heats, I was like, Jesus, yeah. I mean, he was so strong. He won it in actually, that wasn't his best race tactically. I think he would admit that. He managed to hit the front at the right time with sort of 250 to go, gets on the shoulder of the leaders round, you know, at sort of 400 to go. But yeah, that was a messy race from him. And actually, a part of me was like, better opposition, he doesn't get away with it. But they were some of the best opposition, you know, the best guys in the game. So he did get away with it.
Do you know what I would say? So I watched it a couple times. And the first time I thought that, and I was sort of like, yeah, it's not the cleanest run, but he's so good that he's got the job done.
Yeah.
Second time I watched it, though, for me, all he doesn't do anything wrong because he gets on the rail and he makes sure that he doesn't have to run any further distance than anyone else, and he sits in the pack the whole time and he doesn't panic, and at times he then gets himself in bad positions, but it doesn't matter because they're not moving, and he waits and he waits and he waits, and then 500 to go he makes one move, but that's the first time he's expended any energy whatsoever. And to be fair he does actually make a bit of a meal of it and starts pushing a little bit to make his move, but he gets himself out of where he was. And then at 400 to go, where it counts, he's in the perfect position and he's in third place and he's on the shoulder and he can decide exactly when he wants to make a move. So is that then worse tactics than someone who spends loads of energy making sure they're in that position three all race? Or is it actually even better tactics because he's not done anything, but when it's come to 400 meters to go, he's found himself in exactly the right place?
Well, and I agree. And actually, it was quite an easy move for him to make because they were still running a fairly modest pace.
Yeah.
They weren't, you know, they weren't running 55, 56 second pace on that penultimate lap.
No. But and if they would, the field would have opened up and he'd have been able to slide out easier anyway.
Yes, that's very true.
And he knows the depth, that. So.
Yeah. That is very true. So it was, you know, it was a hard move, it looked like the outside a hard move, but for someone like him, he probably didn't even touch on his actual mile pace, you know, his world record pace at all to get in the right position. And then, yeah, moves at the right time. I think Whiteman is terrific from Kerr, untouchable. Schooled everyone.
Cheat code.
Yeah, like,
as soon as he won, there was no way anyone was getting anywhere near
it. We can wax lyrical about that. Yeah, there were some danger moments in the pack for sure, which I think could have cost Kerr. You know, it was a couple of times. I think he even put one foot on the inside on the rail. Mm. There was a lot of pushing. He shoved Whiteman a couple of times to make sure he held his line on the inside. So, yeah, a couple of danger moments from that regard, but yeah, was good enough to just do what he did. Whiteman has, flip side of this, Whiteman has one of the worst races. And he even said that at the press conference that we've seen from him tactically. He was so poor. And then in the end, you think you see him approaching 400 to go and Kerr makes his move. Whiteman always looks at him to say, oh, that's Kerr. I followed it. I don't know if Whiteman intended to follow Kerr, but it certainly looked like when I watched this race a couple of times back, he was just like, okay, Kerr's the danger man. I've just got to follow, and I'll try and outkick him. And I think it was one of the worst things Whiteman could have done because Whiteman needed to test Kerr that last 200, if, you know, you think about the world champs Whiteman won in 2022 when he got the inside with 200 to go on Jakob, you know, managed to get round him at that point and then was able to hold Jakob off. I think that was the one chance Whiteman had to win this if he did do that. Because he just couldn't live with Kervan at top bend. And the problem being that top bend cost a lot of people. It cost Adira in the women's eight because there was a stiff headwind. There's a massive breeze on that top bend every single race. So if you're stretching and really straining around that top bend, like Whiteman was trying to live with Kerr, then you then just blew up in the home straight. And yeah, I think Whiteman, it looked to me like his tactics were like, okay, try and track Kerr. And that was, yeah, in that sort of race, it's near impossible when it's that slow and there's lots of pushing and lots of shoving and people make moves on their terms.
Yeah, Kerr was actually almost Hocker-esque for me. That was like a bit of a Cole Hocker tactical masterclass, like absolutely chill out, then find your way to the right place. And then I guess he kicked from further out and took a bit more control of it. But yeah, I think Whiteman spent too much energy worrying about getting himself in the right position early on when they were just jogging. And so everyone else or a lot of that field are just completely relaxed. But Whiteman did not seem to like relax, and he just sort of, he was tense.
He had lots of, I don't understand. Okay. Yeah. That's really unlike him because he had lots of opportunities. I think Hayward came round to the front at one point. Whiteman had lots of opportunities to just coast his way up to the front, sit on the shoulder of Masalela or even in behind Masalela. You know, Chariot managed it. Myers managed it. Those guys did put themselves there. Whiteman didn't. And he just ended up having to work way too hard, from 300 to go. And then that cost him in the final home straight. And you've got quality passing you, it's always going to be difficult to revive yourself in that moment. He's obviously missed a bit of training, whatever. So it wasn't him at his best. So it's probably hard to be super critical of it. But I want to talk about Campbell.
Yeah. Sorry, just before we move on from Whiteman, when I watched it, I almost thought, if you look at Whiteman's position, like you say, with 300 to go, if you took Kerr out the race and if Whiteman was the front of the race, Whiteman then wins that. Because he's the way, or gets the second, if you like, if we're going to ignore Kerr and say that Kerr's untouchable. But it's because he's stretching to catch Kerr rather than actually, he could have controlled group two and got silver. And then if you watch the whole race and like almost ghosted Kerr out of the way, you'd be like, how's Whiteman lost that? But it's because he's just reaching for Kerr. But we don't expect someone of Jake Whiteman's caliber to sit back and say, I'm fighting for silver.
No way.
Of course. No, and that's why he's a phenomenal athlete, is because he would never do that.
He needed to, for me, he needed to, looking back, so easy for us to sort of analyze this now, but yeah, he needed to make it hard for Kerr to pass him, I think, in that final 200, because Kerr was able to breeze past Myers and Chariot. Those guys, they do not have a change of pace. They just cannot react. And Myers is being, for me, he's being outed. You know, look at these races. He finally wakes up with 100 to go, but it's just, they just don't have that zip. They don't have that change of pace. And nor did Jakob. That's why Jakob was, you know, if you attacked him, he was never easy to get round, but that's why people were able to get round him.
And Myers though, like what? Cause you can say, I think, they said on commentary, they were like, oh yeah, he's clearly been told that in this sort of caliber field, you can't just run away from it. I'm like, yeah, but you still got to play to your strengths. And in this caliber field, you certainly can't just let it go slow and expect to be able to beat everyone over 100 meters. Yeah. Like he's probably got a better shot of trying to run 3:44, right?
Yeah. Well, I think it was pretty cold and windy.
Relatively. Do you see what I'm saying?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, he's run 3:20 at 1500, he probably is able to run a 3:44 mile. But I think his big weakness, and he's only young. He's got a massive future ahead of him. But there's something he needs to work on. Is just that initial ability, because Josh Kerr just hammered by them. Chariot's never been one to be able to change pace at the flip of the switch, and neither Myers. And the problem is, if you can't change pace like that, you do lose positioning. You lose your position. You're it's easy for guys to get round. You know,
you've got to be the one to make the move. If you can't change pace, you've got to start accelerating from the back of the pack. And then by the time the guys at the front realize that you're coming, you're already at speed, and it doesn't matter that your change of pace hasn't been that good.
Absolutely. Because Myers ended up, you know, Kerr passes him, Whiteman passes him. I think maybe, was it Hayward giving it a crack?
Yeah,
as well?
Hayward was right there.
and sort of coming up as well. But, you know, and then Myers has to get around Chariot. He then has to get around Whiteman. Kerr's gone by that point. Look, did it change the outcome? I just don't think anyone was going to beat Josh Kerr, whatever the race was on this occasion. So it probably doesn't matter. Could Myers have been closer? Yes. Does, you know, for me, his weakness was clear. He's had one of the worst back straights that we've seen. And that's because, yeah, like you said, he didn't lean into what he does best, is that slow build, that slow wind up. And that's what he responds to. He can do that almost better than anyone. And he didn't do it. He was sort of waiting and waiting and waiting on Chariot's shoulder. And I'm just thinking, mate, once Kurt goes by you, he's not coming back.
Yeah.
Yeah. And
What did you think about having the mile? We've not really spoken about it too much versus the 1500.
I wonder if the race would have played out similar if it was a 15.
I think it gave Kerr.
I really liked it.
An increased sense of,
I need to own this. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He runs a mile record last week and then they race a 1500. I don't think he's as big. I guess the inflation of Kerr's invincibility.
Yeah, I actually really liked it. And for Kerr, you know,
this season's been all about the mile. And it's smart marketing from Kerr. Like, okay, I want to run the commies for Scotland. It's going to be a mile and I'm going to go after the mile world record. Because realistically, look, on that day in London, he could have gone after the 1500 meter world record, right?
Yeah. Yeah, agreed. Agreed. Yeah, and I don't know if it changes the race dynamic. I think the 1500 dynamic's always a little different, but it was certainly a good watch. Hayward. For me, just showing a little bit of lack of sort of tactical prowess, to be honest. Back and forth a lot. On the outside a lot, back and forth a lot. Still close as well. I think fourth in that field is very, very strong. And I don't think he could ask for more. Like, I don't think he was going to beat Chariot, Myers or Kerr. And if it wasn't one of those, it would have been Whiteman. So,
yeah.
He's got the best out of his race. Great run from him,
and I'll be interested to see how he goes next week. Be sharper, certainly.
Yes,
and the standards
more confident.
It's not going to be as good.
Top three aren't going to be as good.
Yeah, you take Myers out, take Chariot out.
I've got to give it to Chariot. Out. You know, Chariot every single year is there. Is a 3:29-2:30 guy. I've got to give it since probably what 2017, when he. 2019 he won world champs.
Yeah, when he was absolutely ridiculous those couple of years.
Yeah, 2017 he was second behind Manangoy, who got done for drugs. So he's had he's coming off for 10 years at top of the game globally over 1500. Very, very impressive. Goes under the radar. And looking like he's kind of challenging his best form again. So, but you're right. The Euros 1-2-3, will it be as strong as that 1-2-3 of commies? No.
It can't be. None of the medalists are in it. So it really, really can't be. Mate, is that a wrap up the men's mile?
Ollie Hall, actually, bit of a revival, Pippin Whiteman. And I'm just seeing, Tom Keane back in 11th. Just, I guess, when your first championship final like that, it's, you know, you just take what you can get and actually, was competitive for a long time, just, you know, clearly doesn't have the wheels over that last lap yet, as he's operating much, much closer to his best.
Yeah. There you go, mate. Shout out Georgia Bell, because again, someone who didn't put a foot wrong. And I'm so here for these races going slow. Like we've had, what was Kerr's winning time? 3:54 in the mile and 1:59 for Georgia Bell in the 800. And may it keep coming, you know, like I this is what I want to see in finals. I'm fed up of these fast races and I want to see tactical masterclasses. And Georgia Bell for me was just supreme. Obviously goes through, I think in 60, 61. And the decision to go at the front at the slow pace for me is always one that I love in that they're going so slow that it doesn't really matter anyway, but she can totally dictate a race and control the race, cover any moves. And that's what happened. Like as Sarah Billings makes a massive move and Georgia Bell's just able to match it and then decides, well, look, she's made her move. She's made me accelerate. So I'm just going to keep going from here. And then there was no way in hell that Odira is going to come past, because even if she's closing slightly quicker, the differential is not enough to make up the distance that Bell's already got on her.
And so Adira, like you said as well, hits the wind. She's stretching. She's battling it. And Georgia Bell's just smooth as you like, as always. Clear. And she's never getting caught in that position.
Yeah. 27. I think she ran a 27.7 last 200. 13.6 final 100. I thought this was going to be a banana skin for Georgia Bell. I really did. I just thought, Adira's in there. Clearly had a little setback post that pre-meet, you know, the pre-Diamond League and stuff. Yeah, how's she going to cope? Adira's clearly in good form. Beat Kelia pre, and I just thought maybe she'd challenge, but Adira's positioning. You're right. You know, Georgia is tactical masterclass. And I think what's impressive about Georgia, she is looking like she can run an 800 any which way she wants. And that's rare, you know, she's far more multi-dimensional than Keely, by the looks of things. How would Keely have fared in a 13.6 last 100 off of that pace? I do think Georgia's got a better range, a better change of pace.
It's interesting. I actually think Keely would fare pretty well. I just don't think she ever lets it happen. That's for me, that's more of the issue. I think physically, she probably... Look, I'm not going to say she definitely wins it, but she's certainly there or thereabouts, right? And it's more, I just don't think, I think Keely's almost got...
We're not going to get a matchup. I'm just so gutted about the Euros. We're not going to get that matchup. I'm so gutted.
But I think Keely never lets a race go 159.
No, maybe it's a heat or heat or something. No, she doesn't.
So we won't know. We won't see if... But I guess it's that pressure, that expectation that... She's going to go and run quick. Everyone has.
Yeah. And it works for her. You know, it works blowing away the field. You know, just having it so there's one or two of you left in the home straight and who can outstrength one another. But yeah, I was very impressed with Georgia. She moved. For me, Adira, let's get on her position because I thought it was, she really lost this race. She needed to be sitting on Georgia Bell. You know, why are you giving basically the best or one of the best 800 runners in the world, like, why is Adira in the pack?
You know, this is Billings' positioning.
It's a bit like what we were saying about Whiteman. Like, why was he in the pack knowing the dangers of Kerr? Why was Adira in the pack knowing that Georgia Bell was up at the front running the shortest line the whole way? Adira probably ran 815 meters, or 810 meters, whatever. Georgia Bell's run bang on 800. And again, Adira tries to move on the top bend. She starts panicking. She moves on the top bend. And what's on the top bend? A massive headwind. You could see her move out and just bang. This is almost like hitting a brick wall, just trying really hard, not going anywhere. Meanwhile, Georgia Bell's accelerating, putting her foot on the gas, and just gets quicker and quicker all the way down the home straight. So, yeah, mightily impressed from Georgia Bell, because made the world champion look very, very average.
Yeah. And whilst we're not going to see her over 800 meters next week, I think it bodes really well for the 1500. And if she comes away from this summer with gold over 800 meters at the Commies and gold over 1500 meters at the Europeans, that's a fantastic year.
Oh, and yeah, she going from strength to strength. What's she going to do next year? 27, 28. Looking at it though, I think there's going to be a big transition soon in our sport. Like, you look at all of the figures, and by the end of 2028, and maybe that's obvious, but there's just going to be a big generation that is waiting to come through. We're going to lose some massive stars 2028, you know, because I think that's probably going to be, maybe Kerr continues on, but it's probably going to be the end of Whiteman. Muir is showing like she's near the end. You know, will Georgia go on for another Olympic cycle? Doubt it. Will Keely be a world beater in 2029? Maybe. Doubt it. Bergen, Patterson, those guys, you know. So it's like, there's going to be a big transition period in our sport in the next few years.
Yeah. Which is needed.
One thing I would say is that age group have just dominated for the last 8 years. And in many ways, it's been amazing to see so many Brits on podiums at major championships. And we are, incredibly strong nation over middle distance, but we probably have limited, you know. It was like when we had Farah at the top for so long, you limit that 5K growth coming through. And because of these dominators, you almost put a stop to anyone coming through because there's no support, because the support is with the stars. Yeah. Rightly so.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Look, let's chat about Megan Keith and Hannah Nuttall over 5,000 meters, because I think we wrote off Keith a bit, didn't we, mate? Going into this, and I think we thought that when it came down to it, Niall was going to be the one to have a shot at the medal.
Yeah, we did. Nuttall gave. She just gave him too much respect. You know, Keith, credit to her, just was like, after that 10K, and sometimes that 10K is probably the best thing that could have happened to Keith, because she just decided, hey, I've got to be me. I've got to do what suits me. Mm. I've got to press. I've got to like make these women really hurt. That's what Keith's good at. She did that. Throws in I think four laps to go, 66, something along those lines, throws that in. Hannah Nuttall, the race, you know, pops wide open straight away. Hannah Nuttall can't respond. Never was able to get back on it. They slowed a touch. They dropped to maybe some 68, 69s after that initial burst from Keith, but didn't slow enough for Nuttall to get on it. And I think she'll be kicking herself, because had she just suffered and got through that 66 lap, then she still would have been in contact. And then I think she would have been able to maybe challenge a little bit more for a medal, but never had contact. And, you know, credit to Megan Keith, just kept pouring it on, and was able to hang on to that bronze.
And like you say, playing to her strengths, right? Because that's what Keith is so, so good at.
Yeah.
Just making it hard and then just getting on with it. Really pleased with Megan Keith after, I'm sure, what was a disappointing 10,000. Again, we'll get on to the 1500 with the women, right? But the Aussies just killing it. Or the mile, sorry. But yeah, Rose Davies, Jess Hull, top two. You can talk about any of the events and they're just killing it.
Rose Davies in unreal shape. Yeah, I mean, I was surprised Kai Robinson didn't go and claim the 5K, because, you know, after his 10, he looked in great nick as well. But we'll get on to that. But for me, Jess Hull just...
Oh, in both.
For me, Jess Hull just... She's too close to Rose Davies. Like, there was no act of surprise. Rose Davies could feel Jess Hull the whole way. And you could see Rose Davies just doing what anyone would do in that position. I know you're going to attack. I know you're going to attack. I'm going to hold this rhythm. I'm going to manage my effort. The minute you attacked, I'm going to respond, and that will kill her. And she did that. And she knew when, and she had the advantage of knowing exactly when Hull was going to press and try and go past, because she was so close to her. Whereas if Hull is just tucked in behind on the rail, instead of sort of pressing up on the shoulder, she's tucked in behind on the rail, giving Davies a bit of a yard or so. Davies is running blind then. She doesn't have a clue. You know, I know they have screens at stadiums now, but she doesn't know how Hull's feeling. She doesn't know when she's going to attack so much. And then Hull can just come by and steal a yard. And if you go past someone and steal a yard, it's hard for them to get back. But she didn't even get a yard. You know, if you go and watch, Bekele and Lagat in the 09 World Champs, very similar. El Guerrouj and Bekele in 04, very similar. You know, just running so close to one another that the person who's got that inside knows when they're pressing and can hold them off. But that's maybe an argument for getting rid of screens. I've never liked screens. If you look, Rose Davies is always Abby Caldwell just looking at the screen the whole way down the home stretch. Rose Davies would have been doing the same, you know, and so you're just so much more aware of what's going on behind you. And I don't know if that should be the case.
Yeah, I guess it is. A lot of anything, that you only access it when you get to the top level, don't you? And so that's where it's...
Yeah, and it's good for the crowd. Like, don't get me wrong, they are useful, but I think they're having
same for
impact.
Everyone, though. It's the same for they're everyone, and they're aware of it. I think that the issue for me with Hull is just like, you've got to feel sorry for her in that she's, no matter what the caliber of the field, she comes second. Because if Kip Yegon's in that race, she probably comes second to Kip Yegon.
Yeah, maybe.
She just finds a way to do that, but she just can't get over the line even when it's a weaker field, and that's not taking anything away from the other athletes. But
well, this is what I'm saying. I don't know if she's quite like her killer instinct is like, okay, I'm just going to try and run as fast as I can. Like, I don't know if she's quite smart enough when she chooses to attack people. And you know, she advertised her attack too much against Rose Davies. Makes it easy to defend and fight off. And that's what Davies did. She's in great shape. Whereas if you're a little sneakier, bide your time and really try and rip by, I think you make a difference. And she could have won that. So, but yeah, well, it was very, very impressive 1-2 for them. And yeah, Megan Keith, superb. Hannah Nuttall as well. I still thought it was solid from Nuttall, you know, given the quality in that race.
Oh, it is.
And mate, I mean, when I was looking at that Niaga, the Kenyan, Caroline Niaga, I was like, where do I recognize that lady from? Podium Festival a couple of years back. Caroline Iaga breaks 15 in the pissing rain in Leicester. And I was like, wow, fair play.
That's the pathway.
Get yourself
down to a podium, guy.
Same year Gebret turned up. But anyway, and Ines Fitzgerald's, solid enough for her. Just good to get, she's just gaining experience. I think she's, definitely needs to. She's only very young, so it's hard to criticize. But yeah, I mean, her weakness is always going to be that last mile. What can you do over that last mile?
Yeah.
So far.
Great exposure for her, though.
I wonder if she's going to look at Megan Keith and go, actually, Megan is clearly, for me, really developed her top end. But I wonder if Ines is going to go, okay, Megan's got the confidence to sort of hit the front. And it's taken a few years for Megan to get that confidence, but to just hit the front, take it on. And I wonder if Ines, I mean, she was in no position to at the comics, but, future.
Well, I think that will be what she does once she is capable of it. Once she's there or thereabouts in terms of her PB, she will do that because she's done that through every age group. So I don't see why that would change. Mm.
Agreed. Right. Women's mile, because it was mightily impressive and there were some big disappointments with big names not making a final.
Yeah, there was. And obviously alluded to it earlier with the Aussies. I mean, that's an absolutely ridiculous thing to do to go three. Obviously, Abby Caldwell winning it, Jess Hull in second, and Claudia Hollingsworth in third. And we called it, didn't we? And unfortunately, the Ava Lloyd, Sarah Calvert, Gemma Riki just never... We're never going to challenge that.
No. Gemma Riki is clearly struggling a little bit, which is, a bit of a surprise. I remember seeing her at Watford run 158. But clearly. But again, I just think for me, Riki is just so much time on the outside and working just way too hard in sections of the race. She doesn't need to. But I think Sarah Calvert's looked at this and she's gone, okay, she's controlled it at the front. She recognizes that I need to make this a sit and kick race. I've got an amazing kick. And to be honest, she did, she had her last lap was, I want to say it was like 57, 57, 58, so it was a decent kick for her, and Ava Lloyd. But the problem,
she's not ready though for that.
I think the problem Calvert had is actually she had to work too hard when they came by. Was it Stafford who came by and made a move? Calvert responded. And ended up, so instead of Calvert running like a really hard last 200, like she did at British Champs, and sort of winding it up and then really pinging that and attacking that last two, she ended up actually having to work really hard from sort of 600 out, 500 out. And I think that, because she was like, I've got to hold this position, which, you kind of do. But it just meant that by the time she got to sort of 200 to go, she just started to lose the legs, started to lose her legs a little bit, which was a shame, and ended up, obviously, Ava Lloyd coming past her, which is a big scalp for Ava Lloyd. Very impressive from her in sixth.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. But look, it is exciting for Ava Lloyd and Sarah Calvert because whilst I think as much as they're fairly close to them, I just think that the Aussie women are a step above at the moment. These two have some time. And the space is opening. Like you say, there's almost been blockers, but I don't think... the likes of Katie Snowden, Reve Walcott-Nolan, Laura Muir, they're not going to be barriers for these girls going forward in the next couple of years.
No, I mean, Ava Lloyd, showing actually, give her a few more opportunities on maybe some of these world tours and she can really go and post a fast time for me. But outside of Georgia Bell, there definitely is a vacancy in the women's 15 because, Katie Snowden and Walcott-Nolan for me just they've had a very, very up and down couple of years now. They're not consistently performing and I think it's very harsh, but they're sort of in that fun cycle, aren't they? Get to 2028 and then sort of will reassess their careers. I'm sure they're contracted till then with all the brands and stuff. So they'll still be a threat to make that team, but definitely Lloyd is looking and Calvert looking like they can sort of punch in it. They just need to get quicker.
They're not looking at the start of the season and thinking, wow, there's no spot for me.
No.
They're now able to look and think, can go grab something there.
I think, Calvert definitely tried to have an impact on this race, which I do respect.
Yeah.
Could she run better if she just, who I'm sure if someone else took it up, they too would have took it up pretty slow. And maybe that would have just took a bit of stress off for Calvert. And she probably could have finished a bit higher up maybe, because it's always tough when you're fading that last two. But yeah, I guess you got to take your shot, haven't you? But Abby Caldwell was nice and impressive. Mate, I'll read you out these 100 splits from Caldwell, right? Last 600 of this race, 14.8, 14.2, 14.2, 14.2, 14.6. Very impressive. World sub, I think their last 800 must have been just under 2 minutes.
Which one do you think?
If not too flat.
Apart from Georgia Bell, no one ran sub two in the women's eight.
Yeah. Actually, I guess actually their last 700 was equivalent of about 60 pace, because they still ran like another 19.100 to 900 meters. So yeah, their last 700 was basically two flat, 2:01 pace, which is very impressive.
It is. Speaking of 800s, mate, should we chat about Patterson and Botterill?
Patterson, Botterill, Bergen not making it through. Bergen's semi was tough to watch. You could see it. Like, Bergen is usually so stable in the upper body. You know, there's no movement, powering those legs through. And you could just see he was uncomfortable from the get-go in that one, and was rocking, rolling, even early on in that race. And I thought, this isn't Bergen in shape. And yeah, unfortunately, misses out on that final. And the guy who was last into the final goes on to win this race. Navisky Anderson. Huge run from him, the Jamaican. Used to train with Marshall Ayrup down at Miss State. Yeah, but...
Yeah, and your favourite athlete of all time, Peter Bowl, down in seventh.
Yeah. But let's talk about the Brits. Patterson and...
Hey, what
and,
does Patterson need to do to medal in this race? Or to win? Because
I'm not going to lie.
Last week was... We spoke about how... Bergen and
this
Patterson.
If they want
to go be world beaters, they need to at least medal here, if not win it.
Look, this was a soft final. This was a soft final, mate. Like, Patterson just needs to look at this field and just go, especially with Bergen out of question.
I'm better than him.
He's better than all of them. He is better than all of them.
Wow.
And, you know, he is.
Maybe not.
I would say he's better than Kinyamal. He is better than Kinyamal. Anyway.
He's there or thereabouts. Yeah, I agree.
And he just needs to pay closer attention, man. I don't know what it is, you know. And again, his race was doomed after the first 200, where he found himself. You know, you just can't surd around those men, especially when it's all windy and blustery as well. It makes it even harder. That top bend was blowing gale. If you look at Patterson's line, the last 200, oh my God, like, Botterill and him have a very different last 200. They virtually finish side by side. Botterill stays on the inside. Yeah. Things open up for him a little bit. He does get cut off by Kinyamal, which is unfortunate for him. Otherwise, he probably could have gone a medal. But he stays on the inside. He just runs right. Patterson goes swerving out into lane 2-3. Is no doubt covering the ground much better than anyone else. Has the legs. Comes charging down the home straight, but he's off the top end in a headwind and everything. Lanes 2 and 3, he was just never going to get there, and it's just his own fault, unfortunately. And yeah, he just needs to pay closer attention to the front. If he does that, I think he could have won that.
Yeah.
And he'll be so frustrated, because that was a massive opportunity for a medal. I don't know how many opportunities you're going to get like that in your career to go and claim gold.
Yeah. Yeah, it sounds hard.
And that's all there is to it. I think Botterill ran a great race. You know, in comparison, Botterill ran a great race, got himself on the inside and was just like, fuck it, just going to stay patient here. Something's going to open up, which he did. And he ran the risk of actually not being able to show, you know, completely empty the tank, because he got checked with 50 to go. And that's the risk you run when you play the inside game. It's 50-50. But I think he'll be delighted with his result regardless. Whereas Patterson, on the other hand, will be very, very disappointed. And I don't know if it's a confidence thing or what. But if it's, you know, and it's different. If this race is a 140, you know, if they go through in 50 point, I do think this field would have been tying up, and it would have been much easier. They probably would have been single file. It would have been much easier for Patterson to work through this field.
Mm.
But when they go through 53, it's going to be very difficult for Patterson to get by because they're already into lane two and three. They're very bunched.
It's those races where I'm just surprised he doesn't just run quicker because he can kick off. He can kick when they run.
Well, it's relative.
Yeah.
It's relative. I mean? He's never kicking, but he's strong enough that he can come past everyone.
So I'm like, surely you...
Mm. And guys are fading. You know, guys are fading. Whereas everyone was trying to lift it that last 200, which just makes it difficult. So I'm sure he'll correct it at the Euros, but I saw it, you know, it's giving me flashbacks to Rhodesia in 09 when, you know, he analyzes his race and he misses out on the final and he goes, okay, I've had enough of this. I'm going to become a front runner. And, you know, I wonder if Patterson needs to just completely upend his tactics altogether.
Mm-hmm. Would it be interesting with Bergen in the race, right, wouldn't it? Because maybe that's what Patterson needed.
And Kinyumar does, you know, Kinyumar does go off fast. Like it was pretty swift early and Kinyumar's semi was swift, but it slows up. And once it does that, I think you just run the risk of never being able to make it to the front end.
Yeah.
Shame for Patterson. Mate, what else? That's probably it for the men's eight. Probably analyze that.
Yeah, I think that's it for the men's eight. I think we need to look back earlier in the week. Obviously, I think we recorded on Wednesday, but we recorded before Elise Thorner took that silver medal over the steeplechase.
Yeah, huge. I said she'd get close to the national record. She almost broke it. She's going to break 9 minutes this year.
Yeah.
She'll probably have to wait till the World Ultimate Champs or maybe one of those final Diamond Leagues. Might not get the opportunity at Euros, but she's just got to go all in on winning gold at the Euros. I think it's very, very doable for her.
Yeah. Yeah. She's come on so much, hasn't she, in the past couple of years?
Do you know what it is with Thorner is she just knows her rhythm. And in a steeple, it's a massive advantage if you know your rhythm. You know, if you just know what you're lapping in and, you know, she never gets sucked into the race she doesn't want to be a part of. She runs her race.
Mm.
And it just means she, you know, she's able just to finish strong. She's always got momentum. She has a great knack at getting momentum at the right time in these races. And puts herself in the right positions to thrive off those round toes starting to suffer and clawing back these gaps and does it again. I think the interesting thing, which is going to be very interesting at Euros, is she basically is the fastest in the field, right? You've got Fino, who is obviously the defending champ, who will be in there. And at her best, Fino is phenomenal, but she's only, I think she's just sub nine, is she? Fino at her best, but there's no doubt Elise could run that. It's like, how does Elise run a race that she needs to, that was a bit of a Diamond League style run.
Yeah.
At the commies.
I don't think she needs to, though. I think
she'll just wait and kick and try and do it in any
type of race. Because you don't even have to wait. She doesn't have to wait to the last 100, right? She can wait and wait and wait and even make the last K at 9 minute rhythm. And that's going to be enough to shake a lot of people.
She does give me Jager vibes. She gives me big Anna Jager vibes. Like, you know, Jager was just the best at knowing his rhythm. Like we said before, he never got sucked into a race he didn't want to be a part of. So good at judging his effort. But just never quite had that zip, that change of gear over that last lap. And to be honest, Thorner hasn't been in a position that we could judge her change of pace really over the last 200 because I don't think she's ever been in a race like that. Or at least I haven't seen her be in a race like that.
Yeah, not where she's battling for the win, right? It's only been in Diamond Leagues
where
she's not really.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the Diamond Leagues, they're time trial. She's already, you know, she's full gas.
Yeah.
Already. So how she runs the Euros is going to be fascinating. It's going to be a great matchup. But there's a chance if she just decides, right, I'm going to try and run nine flat, she could well run everyone out of that race because I don't think the Europeans are on her level at the moment. I think she's just a notch up. It's close, but I think she's just a bit.
And that would be cool, right? That's what we want to see. We want to see some quick races.
It'd be unreal. I think she should go for it. She's in the shape of her life, but it's bold. Hey, I think that wraps up the commies, which was actually good viewing. Very, very good viewing.
It was, and we'll be back, obviously, to preview the Euros this weekend. So, yeah, we'll release our Sunday, won't we, mate?
Yeah, we will. Yeah, we'll preview Euros. We'll have a look. We're waiting for those full lists to sort of come in. we'll preview the sort of overall champs, and then we'll be back with daily episodes or episodes every other day. We've got a few people who are willing to phone in and sit down and analyze those races. But please, if anyone else fancies sitting down after some of these finals or even semi-finals and you want to just talk and analyze like we've done today, let's bounce. Let's bounce off one another and get yourself on the podcast.
We'll get some, we'll get that results website as well updated for the Euros. We had some decent feedback on it already. So we've changed a few bits around where people have said. So as much as I said on Wednesday, there's non-distance events for all you non-distance fans. Someone commented and said, we listen to your podcast because we only want distance. So I was like, so the sprint hurdles, jumps and throws are on there, but they're on a tab right at the bottom that you have to open up if you're interested in those. So it's just distance for all you hardcore out there. And actually, it's now easier for me to check results as well. So yeah, not a bad shout. But we'll get that updated for the Euros. But any more feedback on that would be great as well. If you didn't know about it, it's in the link in our Instagram bio, and it's in the podcast description as well. Yeah, just before we wrap up though, obviously a few results over in Belgium at IFAM. I think a few people wanting to impress who weren't actually picked for the commies, you know?
Yeah, I mean, it's always big. I think they're calling it now World Qualifier meeting. You know, it is, like we discussed, everyone was there. All the Brits went over to Belgium to run fast and run fast. They did the 5K, particularly impressive. Now, one storyline, Aaron Gebremariam, for me, 13:05. He's got a British flag next to his name. I don't know if he's got British citizenship yet. The rumors are he's applying for it. He could be a problem. Not a problem, a good thing for British athletics and British distance
running.
Problem
for the others, yeah.
But a problem, yeah, problem for the likes of Scott Beattie, Dave Malarkey, you know, these guys who are challenging him for those 5K teams in years to come. And yeah, very impressed. And he's got steadily better. This is a guy, like, we'd see him front run BMCs in 13:30-odd last year and the year prior. And now he's managed to work his way down. Coached by Vince Wilson, seems work his way down to 13:00s. And yeah, very, very impressive. From him, yeah. I was like, wow, he's arrived. And look, Belgium, it's the quickest meet, basically on the World Tour circuit. I think over 5K outside of the Diamond League, this is the one in every event, the 15, the 5, the steeple. It's always very, very hotly contested and deep. Importantly, and the weather's amazing, and it just falls at the right time of year. You know, early August, and people are really cooking by that point. So, finished 7th overall, but yeah, brilliant run from him. And yeah, if that citizenship is confirmed or is in the process, it's going to be super exciting for 5,000 meter running in our country.
Yeah, it is. Other end of the spectrum, obviously Scott Beattie coming off the 10K at commies, doesn't go his way.
He DNFs. I don't know why he's done it. It just seems strange to me. I was stunned though he was on the start list, but I kind of get it. Like, yeah, maybe he would have run a 5,000. Let's say he was picked for the Commonwealth Games. He would have run a 5,000 that day anyway. He would have contested the commies. So from that perspective, yeah, maybe it's like practicing that turnaround. But it's very different doing a championship 5K on a Saturday in comparison to like an all out time trial where they're going to try and run for sub 13 and the race itself and the 62s travel. With the travel, you've come off a huge high at commies. It's ambitious. And what's a shame is that just puts a dent on a downer on a week. And then you sort
when you're trying to prep for a competition this next week.
And you're trying to prep for Europeans. You know, and you're going into Europeans, like, oh man, you know, like he could have, 10Ks are hard. That was a big ask. That was a big effort he put in at the commies to finish 5th. And it seems, the bits on social seems disappointed with that. I thought, given the field and the guys ahead of you, maybe there's a medal just dangling, you know, on the off chance. But, you know, Malarkey sort of outperformed him all year and Malarkey managed to scrape 3rd. So I think, it would have been a massive ask for Beattie to get a medal. So I think he should be fairly happy with his 5th. Obviously, as athletes, you always want more. And that's what makes you great. And so, yeah, credit to him. He's got the right mindset, clearly. But yeah, I thought it was rogue. He went over there and, yeah, unfortunately, DNF'd. Whatever reason, I'm not sure. Gebremariam, very impressive. A few other results that did catch the eye there. Matt Ramsden, 13:27. Nice PB for him. Will Barnacker getting back to his best, 13.29. This is great. He's building momentum at the right time at this back end of the year, and hopefully next year, you know, next couple of years, he can really come out firing. It's been a tough one for him. Ben Porticus, 13.31, massive PB, 13.30 for him, sorry, massive PB. McMurray, 13.32. Charlie Brisley, 13.32, actually won his race, did Charlie Brisley. So yeah, really, really deep. You look at these results now and you say, right, this is, you know, these are some new names. They're not really new names, but yeah, are these going to be the names spearheading Champs 5K over the next couple of years? How was your men's 5K? Women's 5K? I'll stay on the men's now because then we'll move to the women's after. But yeah, men's 15. Henry Jonas was fast as the Brits, 335.0 PB. Callum Elson, 336.0. McCluckey, Elson, 335.9. Sorry, McCluckey, 336.0. Ted Higgins, 336.6 PB for him. Tyler Billiard, 337. Perhaps would have wanted more. Fogg, 337. Would have wanted a bit more. Stonia, 340. Slight improvement on his Watford BMC. So trending in the right direction still. Still some good races left this season. You know, St. Mary's BMC this week, this weekend. And then you've got Tooting BMC. So still some big opportunities for these guys to get quicker.
Yeah, certainly is. But I think, yeah, all of them just waiting to make the next jump, aren't they, mate? Like, particularly, I guess, like, you like Estonia, Fogg, they've been in teams and they'll be hoping that they can, yeah, get back in those teams, you know?
Exactly. Women's 5, just to update you there. Cara Hughes, 15.06. Amelia Rourke, a big run from her, 15.11. Very, very impressive. Amelia Quirk, 16 minutes. And then,
yeah, Cara Hughes off the back of Steeple as well.
She turned around quick, didn't she?
9.40 on Wednesday. Over
there. Yeah, travel's not too bad, I guess, but yeah, you're right. Molly Hudson, 4.04 and a 15. Holly Dixon, 4.05. Big runs from them. Nice improvements. Kate Axford, 4.07. And so, yeah, PB's all round, really, for our British women.
Yeah, there you have it. That's IFAM. And we'll look ahead to the Euros now.
We will indeed. We will see you. We'll catch you all Sunday. And we'll hopefully welcome a few of you on next week's podcast when we're analysing the Euros day by day, or every other day at least, and see what the timetable's saying. But yeah, have a great week.